This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places and proselytizing of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Wow. That is on there.
You want me to give it a shot?
Well, that's not something you see sitting in a stoplight every day. We're on Pico, just east of Crenshaw. A couple of folks are holding up a ladder next to a telephone pole while a third one climbs up and struggles to rip a sign down. Oh, look, he got it.
Oh, that was smart.
There we go.
You've seen signs like this before, one that reads, Jesus, the way, the truth, the life. Some messages are a little harsher, like repent or go to hell. The people who just ripped that sign down, though, are atheists, a group of volunteers on a mission to secularize the streets by removing illegally posted religious signs.
They just start to become a normal part of society, and there's nothing normal about this.
Then you give an inch and an inch and an inch, and eventually it becomes a mile, and it's so normal that we're so extended into this secular space that, you know, that's how these things...
In God We Trust gets on the money.
Exactly. That's how we end up with In God We Trust. Exactly.
Now, to some, that might sound like a noble cause, but it's not exactly popular with the Christians putting those signs up to save souls. KCRW's Kaylee Wells picks up the story from here.
It's a goofy group, but make no mistake, they take their work seriously. They call themselves Atheist Street Pirates, and their goal is to, and I'm quoting, scuttle the efforts of religious scallywags who post illegal street propaganda.
We kept joking about, like, well, why don't we call it the Atheist Rubbish Removal Group? Arr, like, oh, that just sounds like a bunch of pirates.
The leader of this whole operation is Evan Clark. He's the captain of this ship. And by ship, I mean this old minivan carrying three atheists, a reporter, a growing stack of signs severed from the street poles of L.A., and the tools needed to remove them. Clark wasn't always an atheist. He grew up a Catholic, but...
I went to a Catholic school in first grade and quickly decided this God stuff's not working for me. I didn't find the word atheist until sixth grade. I was flipping through a dictionary, and I found this word called atheist. I said, whoa, there's a word for me, and I was so excited.
But he didn't just stop believing in a higher being. He founded the Atheist Club at his college, Cal Lutheran. He became the first executive director of the nonprofit Atheists United here in L.A. and founded a volunteer operation dedicated to ripping down religious signs. Now, there have been all sorts of legal fights over religious displays on public property, cases that touch on the Constitution's Establishment Clause. Unsanctioned signs on poles and overpasses? Well, Clark says that's even more cut and dry.
You can stand on top of a highway and hold a sign as loud and proud as you want. You can spend 15 hours up there if you want. But the second you leave it behind, you've left trash on public space. But religious signage, there's tons of laws that say secular land can't preference one religion over the other.
They set sail less than a year ago, and already their voyages are gaining attention. Residents can report signs they find to the pirates, who then try to remove them. These days, they have a lot more reported signs than successful takedowns. This is Anya Overman's first plunder, and she says she's surprised by how difficult it is.
I think I imagined the signs were a little bit easier to get down. I didn't know that they would be fastened that hard and used with, you know, that intensive hardware onto these poles. I mean, these people are serious. They do not want you to get these signs down.
Just like any plunder, this one had ups and downs. Spirits were high in the morning when they picked off a couple easy ones.
That was graceful.
Yeah, grace is the right word. It was a miracle.
But then we happened upon a few that they couldn't find. Or even worse, they found them, but they were impossible to reach.
Repent and believe in Jesus. And it's got four, those look like nail gun type nails in it. God. The amount of work to put that up. I mean, that's two stories tall. That's unbelievably high. Okay, they're more committed than us. They win this round.
Clark says he reports those to public works officials to take them down. He usually doesn't get closure on those cases. But one atheist's failure is another Christian's success. And yes, almost every sign is Christian.
The risk of having to pay a penalty for putting one of these signs up on a pole and somebody actually getting their life, you know, transferred to God in eternity is so worth the risk.
This is Brent Farley.
And I'm the founder of Jesus Saves Sign Ministry.
Once upon a time, Farley didn't believe in a God. He was also using heroin, cocaine, meth, pain pills.
Every day. I wouldn't even go to sleep unless I had something on the counter next to me to wake me up. It became horrifying. And it just made the Lord coming into my life all that much more powerful.
He says it was Easter weekend. He was trying to get clean and going through withdrawal, watching the History Channel when he stumbled upon a show about the cloth that Jesus was buried in.
And by the end of it, I was just convinced that this Jesus character was actually the Son of God.
He says Jesus saved him that weekend.
I go into the bathroom, I start vomiting in my toilet, and I'm just really sick. I'm vomiting. And I felt like he just came into my life. Like when I said, come in and help me, he came in and helped me.
He became a street preacher. And when COVID hit and the streets emptied, he founded this nationwide movement of people putting up street signs. Farley doesn't get up on a ladder himself. His company sells signs nationwide for people to post in their hometowns next to gas station and restaurant signage.
We go down the highway and we have signs for literally everything except how to know God. And that's mind-blowing. Like, how can we drive halfway across this country and not see the Lord's name?
And in Farley's view, the sign might not mean much to some people looking at it, or might even be offensive. But what if there's one person out there who sees the sign and it saves their life, like that History Channel TV show did for him?
To take one of these signs down that Jesus saves, to take that hope away of eternity with our Creator, you're actually taking their hope away from their life so they have nothing to live for. And that can't be tolerated.
Back in the Atheist's minivan, by the end of this four-hour plunder, the Atheist pirates pillaged less than half of the 9 signs they set out to take down. There are dozens left marked on their crowdsourced map.
Although we might not be able to take down as many signs, there's still this more public exposure to the issue and people saying, oh, yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, I would go a step further and say, honestly, the taking signs down is the least important part of this. But really, we're tracking this phenomenon. We're making it known that this is a problem. And we're inspiring the city and other people to pay attention to it. Unchecked religious privilege and microaggressions by some religions. We can't even start the conversation about that, what it means for our society, until we have an understanding of what it is.
And so these teams, led by 2 perfect strangers, one on a quest to save people from eternal damnation, and the other to save them from unwelcome propaganda, will continue this dance with each other until kingdom come. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
Coming up, the counting continues from this week's California primary, but from what we see so far, are there any signs we can see for the runoffs and the November general election? And how does California factor in to who controls the House? That's yours after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. 4 years ago, a blue wave swept Democrats to power in the House of Representatives at the midpoint of the Trump administration. That included a clean sweep of all 7 seats in former Republican territory, Orange County. Well, 2 years later in 2020, even though Joe Biden won the presidency, the GOP flipped some of those seats back, and Democrats barely held on to the majority in the House. Well, conventional wisdom indicates the party in the White House loses seats in the midterms. But if Democrats are to keep control of the House of Representatives, the path runs straight through, you guessed it, Orange County and other seats here in California. This week's primary election may give some hints, maybe some tea leaves of what could be coming in November. And Paul Mitchell is here to give some insight. He's Vice President of Political Data Incorporated. Hey, Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you on. Thinking back to the 2018 upstart class of, you know, we're talking about the Democrats, Katie Hill and Gil Cisneros and Harley Ruta, Katie Porter, Mike Levin. I mean, 4 years later, only a couple of those folks are still in power, Katie Porter and Mike Levin. In fact, Katie Porter has become, you know, this rising star in the Democratic Party, but she's facing a very different district this year after redistricting. Tell us about the new district that she's running in OC.
Yeah, so her district now includes more of the coastal area, more of the area that used to be represented by Republican Michelle Steele. And Republican Michelle Steele was kind of pushed up into a more Asian district that goes through Garden Grove, Little Saigon, Industritos Artesia, and up into Fullerton. Her new district performs based on past elections as being as solid for her in terms of Democratic votes. But, you know, as with all these districts, the caveat is that we haven't seen an election run in these new lines. So where she did pretty solidly in 2020 and where she has $15 million or more in the bank, so she should be okay, the reality is that voters will tell us what these districts mean on Election Day in November. Right now, we have a little snapshot. We have the primary vote, and we can look at that. We only have about maybe half of the votes tabulated, so we have to put that caveat on it and say, like, not everybody who's voted has actually had their ballot counted yet. And it is only a primary electorate, so anything we look at these districts, we have to understand that a general election electorate should include more young people, more Latinos, and be a much broader swath of California. But, you know, we can look at these primary results and say, well, you know, Katie Porter looks like she did pretty good so far in that election. And in Northern LA County, we can look at Mike Garcia versus Christy Smith and say, wow, you know, Mike Garcia looks like he got, you know, over 50%. And maybe he's going to be in a position that's going to make it, you know, challenging for Democrats to win that seat.
Right. This is the seat, the former seat of Katie Hill, who had to resign in the scandal in the Santa Clarita Valley. You know, Christy Smith, the former assemblywoman, she's back running again. This will be your third time running against Mike Garcia. So what kind of chances does she have?
Yeah, so Angelenos will understand that when we're talking about this North L.A. District, I always think of it as like when you're going out to Magic Mountain up in that area. And that district in the old lines was paired with Simi Valley, which a lot of folks will know Simi Valley's more conservative area. And so that was kind of this area where Mike Garcia was able to get a lot of Republican votes. So in redistricting, that Simi Valley portion was lopped off and the district goes more further north and into areas that have more Latinos. So the district became a little bit more Latino, a little bit more competitive for Democrats. So she lost in her last election in 2020 by just around 300 votes. Mathematically, she's in a better position, but the biggest challenge for her and these other Democrats that are running in this election cycle is, come November, are we gonna be having an election with Biden having horrible, fave on fave and his positive ratings being really low, and the issues being around gas prices and the economy and inflation, or are we going to have a better environment for Democrats where the issues are, you know, choice, access to abortion, healthcare, gun control and other things where Democrats can rally? So the biggest question for Christy Smith and Katie Porter isn't so much like looking back to past election results and how that district performed, but it's looking forward 5 months and saying, what kind of national political environment are we going to be in?
I mean, yeah, you not only have that, you've got, I mean, in some ways, democracy on the ballot, too, right? Because we've got the January 6th Commission, which is doing this, you know, primetime presentation that you'll hear, by the way, on KCRW this evening. You know, Paul, you mentioned Michelle Steele. She took back that House seat a couple of years ago from Democrat Harley Ruta. Her house is in Seal Beach. She lives in Seal Beach, and it's now in Katie Porter's new district. So she didn't want to battle Porter, right? So she's switching to this reconfigured 45th district where she's up against a Democrat named Jay Chen. is there a chance for a pickup there, or does Michelle Steele hold?
So I do think it's going to be a challenge for Democrats to pick up that seat. It was definitely drawn to be more Democratic than the prior seat. So it is a potential gain for Democrats in coming election cycles. When we look at the votes so far, and again, not all votes have been tabulated yet, but Michelle Steele plus the third place Republican gets the total Republican votes way over 50%. And that does pose a challenge for Democrats.
So if you had, you know, your tarot cards, your crystal ball,
mm-hmm.
who has Congress come January 2023?
Really, in order for my crystal ball to work, I need to know what happens with the Supreme Court case on the elimination of Roe v. Wade and the potential for, I think, on, you know, before the election, we could have 26 states ban abortion at some level. And what's the national response to that? Do Democrats go, oh, well, that sucks, and sit around and mope about it? Or do they have this be something that's a massive call to action and changes the whole national conversation to one about that? Or is it an environment where we have $10 gas prices and inflation and everybody's upset and there's public safety issues and the election's a referendum on homelessness? Then you could see the election really favoring Republicans. So it's, you know, you tell me the environment, I can tell you what's the likely outcome. But without that, the crystal ball doesn't really work very effectively.
Paul Mitchell, Vice President of Political Data, Inc. Paul, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go!
Back with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. KCRW's Young Creators Project has been showcasing some great music and poetry over the last few weeks. Well, this week, it's visual arts, and today we'll be featuring two young artists who talked with KCRW's art insider, Lindsay Preston Zappas, about their work. You're going to hear from Cece Apietz from Redondo Beach. Cece is a senior at Redondo Union High School and has been creating art since the fourth grade. But first, drawing has been an outlet for years for 20-year-old Kaya King Hall from Venice. Kaya hopes her pursuit as an artist can inspire others to be unapologetically honest in their lives and their art. And Kaya wants people to connect with her work in a way that makes them feel like they're not alone in their feelings. And Lindsay spoke to Kaya about her art and her life.
Kaya, it's great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about the piece that you submitted and maybe sort of describe what it looks like for people that might not have seen it.
Yeah, so it is a 29 and a half inch by 38 inch charcoal drawing. I use myself as reference for the figure, and it's me basically stomping through downtown LA.
That's amazing. I don't think I put together that it was LA. It just looked like cityscape. So that's cool. You're like literally taking over the city.
Yeah, it's not supposed to look like LA too much, but I did use downtown for reference.
Right. And you said you used kind of Google Maps, or you used some photos you found online to create the cityscape.
Yeah, I took screenshots from Google Earth.
And tell us what this piece means to you. You know, the figure has a really powerful stance and is really mm-hmm. confident. Can you tell us what the piece means to you?
Yeah, so as a young woman, I'm made uncomfortable by men a lot, you know, getting stared at, harassed, whatever. And this is sort of a representation of me taking back my power in that situation, in those situations, just sort of like where I stand now with my body and my confidence and all of that.
How do you feel like art helps you communicate that?
I have trouble with words. So art has always been sort of my outlet for whatever I'm trying to get across.
Yeah, I also make art, so I can relate to that. I feel like art has such a power to communicate feelings that maybe we don't even fully understand yet. And it sort of comes out through the art.
Yeah, and I definitely feel like you can give a much more like in your face, like point of view than saying something.
So, you were planning to go to University of Hawaii, Manoa, for marine biology before COVID hit, right?
Yes.
But that plan, COVID, like that didn't end up happening. So tell us about that.
I've always loved the ocean. It's always been like a huge passion of mine. And I still do love it. Art was just always like in the background behind all of that. Once all of my plans for college got ruined. There wasn't like much more that I could do in my day to day besides make art. And I was going through a lot during that period, like pretty much everyone was. And that was just how I was expressing everything. And it gave me like a sense of purpose that I had never felt before. And that was just sort of like a wake up call for me.
So what's next for you?
I'm not sure. I'm just trying to make as much art as I can. I'm attending Santa Monica College right now.
Great.
Taking a bunch of art classes, just like learning, doing my thing. Yeah.
Kaya King Hall is a visual artist. Thanks, Kaya.
Thank you.
And Cece, it's great to have you here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So tell us about the piece that you submitted to KCRW's Young Creators Project.
So the piece I submitted was a lunch tray. That's kind of a typical like lunch you would see at school. It has mystery meat, peas and carrots, a bowl of like peach cubes, a cosmic brownie type dessert, and then some mac and cheese. And the photo of it is a hand kind of scooping the peas to give it a little more of an interactive element. The inspiration for this piece came from me wanting to answer the question of how I can explore the idea of critiquing the poor American food system. And what I mean by this is that I wanted to kind of expose and show how America allows many more ingredients and chemicals in our food that many other countries don't, that are actually pretty harmful to our bodies. And the way I kind of showed this in my art is that each piece is created from inorganic and inedible items. Like in this one, I used a lot of paint, beads, sponge, and foam. Like none of those, obviously, we can ingest.
We can eat. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's amazing. It's such an important topic. So what's next for you?
Well, I am going to Cal State Long Beach to study.
Yeah, congrats. That's exciting.
Thank you. I'm going to study industrial design. And I feel like I definitely learned a lot of skills from the food project that I did, because, you know, you make a lot of prototypes and stuff and like work on designing different products. And I feel like a lot of the skills that I learned from this, the food project, will definitely transfer into my career and like my studies.
That's amazing. It's so cool to see how art and design can kind of come together in that way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Cece. This has been incredible. Congratulations. And thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Cece Apietz from Redondo, a senior at Redondo Union High. Kaya, King Hall, 20 years old from Venice, both part of KCRW's Young Creators Project. By the way, KCRW has put together this big showcase for all of the young creators that's happening this Sunday night at the Mayan Theater in downtown LA. More information at our website, kcrw.com/young creator. While you're there, by the way, you can check us out, find us online, ask questions, share thoughts, even subscribe to the podcast at our website, kcrw.com/GLA. Get the podcast, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us today. Next week, enrollment has been falling dramatically at Catholic schools. A look at the legacy of a couple of them in Boyle Heights, one that closed last year, the other that's closing in just a few weeks. And filmmakers who gathered for Black Lives Matter protests keep these gatherings going a couple years later with mass yoga classes and fun runs. You're going to hear more about that coming up next week right here on Greater LA. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludden, and Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarnoff, Amy Ta, Christine Camito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen today. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You made the show happen, too. Thank you for your time and, of course, your ears. Have a great night.